Welcome to the Weekly Digest from Personalized Intelligence, your cybersecurity edition for Tuesday, June 9th, 2026.
Today, we are examining the erosion of digital borders as cyber warfare moves from peripheral disruption to a central pillar of geopolitical strategy. We are seeing a fundamental shift from localized perimeter defense to a landscape defined by permanent cross-border digital friction.
It is no longer about preventing breaches, but managing inevitable incursions.
Exactly.
We begin by analyzing the escalating tensions in geopolitical cyber warfare and the intensifying struggle for digital sovereignty. Apple just effectively deplatformed a massive chunk of the Russian state's digital infrastructure by removing the Max messaging app from its store, which, if you believe the Kremlin, is a pretty significant blow to their plans for a centralized, digitalized citizenry. Today, we're looking at the hardening borders of the internet, geopolitical cyber warfare, and the messy, expensive pursuit of digital sovereignty.
It is a massive pivot point because the Max app wasn't just a chat tool. Its architecture integrates identity, payments, and government services, making it a high-stakes gateway to essential state infrastructure. By pulling it, Apple has created a critical failure point in Russia's attempt to enforce its 2025 pre-installation mandates.
So the Kremlin tries to build a digital fortress, and Apple just pulls a brick out of the foundation.
The pattern is clear. This isn't just a localized clash between a tech giant and a single regime. We are seeing a global trend where nations are attempting to decouple their digital lifelines from foreign powers. Look at the European Commission's new tech sovereignty package. They are moving to reduce an annual dependency of 264 billion euros on American technology, specifically targeting providers like Microsoft, Google, and Amazon.
264 billion euros. That is a very expensive way to say we don't trust you with our data.
It's more than just a lack of trust, it's a formal regulatory mechanism. The proposed Cloud and AI Development Act, or CADA, introduces a tiered system for data processing. At the highest levels, you're looking at requirements for full supply chain control and EU ownership, with essentially no third country interference allowed.
Wait, so if you're a US cloud provider, you're basically being told you're too foreign for the top tier of European contracts?
But as the record from Recorded Future News points out, this tiered approach could inadvertently trigger massive market fragmentation. If the Level 3 or Level 4 requirements, like mandatory EU ownership, are structurally impossible for international giants to meet, Europe might end up with a protected, non-competitive local industry rather than a resilient one. It risks sovereignty washing, where vendors use local compliance to mask a lack of genuine European control.
It sounds like the EU is trying to build its own walled garden, but they might just end up with a very expensive, very lonely backyard.
And the difficulty is that you can't just build software, you need the hardware. The EU's CHIPS Act II is an attempt to address the semiconductor gap, but critics argue there's a conceptual misalignment. Europe dominates in lithography through ASML, but it's still heavily reliant on American logic design. You can't have digital sovereignty if you're designing the brains of your chips in California.
It's like trying to claim you have a sovereign car industry because you make the specialized wrenches used to fix the engines, even though the engines themselves are all imported.
That's a perfect way to frame it. And while the EU is trying to build walls, Russia is busy upgrading its internal surveillance. The Ministry of Digital Development recently published new technical standards for the SORM system. This isn't just about intercepting the content of your messages anymore. It's a shift toward a metadata-driven surveillance infrastructure. The goal is to map the relational links between IP addresses, device identifiers, and geographic coordinates to create a massive automated map of digital traces.
So they aren't just listening to what you say. They're mapping exactly who you are, where you are, and who you've ever even breathed near digitally.
And the scope is expanding to include information dissemination organizers, which effectively turns any entity managing significant digital infrastructure, banks, universities, even cloud operators, into involuntary nodes of the state's surveillance network. They're moving from blunt internet shutdowns, which cause too much social unrest, to a more sophisticated strategy of targeted surveillance designed to induce self-censorship.
It's a much quieter, much more effective way to suppress dissent. You don't need to cut the power if you can just make everyone too afraid to turn the lights on.
And that psychological dimension is already being weaponized elsewhere. In the Armenian elections, we saw what researchers at Antibot for Navalny identified as the Matryoshka and Doppelganger campaigns. It wasn't just bot activity. It was a hybrid model where digital impersonation of journalists was paired with physical world disruptions, like foreign-sourced bomb threats sent to polling stations.
The cyber attack is designed to trigger a physical panic. It's a feedback loop of chaos.
It is.
And it's a repeatable playbook. We're seeing this transition from stealthy intelligence gathering to active, disruptive interference. Even NATO is struggling to keep up. The current NATO defensive paradigm is built for a decisive response to large-scale military strikes, but it's fundamentally mismatched for the continuous low-threshold cyber incursions we're seeing from Russia and China.
Because you can't launch a counterstrike against a thousand small, annoying pokes that never quite cross the threshold of an act of war.
Right. There's a real push for a persistent engagement model, similar to what US Cyber Command uses, where allies would implement hunt-forward operations to disrupt threats before they reach their own networks. But there's a massive risk in this era of ubiquitous data. As noted in Risky Business, the use of commercially available location data by adversaries like Iran to target US troops creates a massive intelligence gap. Even if you anonymize a device, tracking the movement of a device from a US base to a conflict zone in Kuwait identifies the service member regardless of the digital mask.
Which makes the idea of anonymity feel a bit like a polite fiction in the face of modern geolocation.
It's a terrifying reality. And the recruitment side is becoming just as decentralized. The group TA4922 is expanding its social engineering operations from Asia into the UK, Germany, and Italy. They aren't just hacking servers. They're using WhatsApp, Microsoft Teams, and professional platforms like LinkedIn and Upwork to target academics and journalists, the non-traditional proxies who have access to state secrets.
You don't need to breach a firewall if you can just trick a freelance researcher into sharing a document on a platform they use every day.
Two things stand out. And on the US side, we're seeing a massive structural shift in how the government handles this. There is a bipartisan proposal for a dedicated US cyber force, with a budget potentially reaching $11 billion and 41,000 personnel. There's even talk of a strategic shift in leadership, with the potential nomination of Palantir's CTO Shyam Sankar to lead CISA. This suggests a move toward integrating private sector big data and AI expertise directly into the heart of federal civilian cybersecurity.
It's an attempt to bring the speed of the private sector into a government bureaucracy that usually moves at the speed of a glacier.
It's a necessity. We're seeing the arrival of an era of autonomous cyber warfare. The presence of six Anthropic engineers within the NSA to deploy the Mythos platform for offensive operations against nations like China and Iran illustrates how deeply private sector AI is now integrated into state-sponsored network infiltration. We are moving toward a reality where AI can detect and exploit zero-day vulnerabilities without human intervention.
Which means the arms race isn't just about who has the better code, but who has the more capable algorithm.
And the stakes are escalating across the board. While the US is debating the creation of a new military branch, China is implementing unprecedented state control over its own talent, imposing travel restrictions on top AI researchers to prevent brain drain. Meanwhile, we're seeing the very foundations of the internet being manipulated, from meaning attacks that spoof GNSS signals to the massive concentration of malicious domains within just eight specific registrars.
It's a landscape where the infrastructure itself, the satellites, the registrars, the cloud providers, is being contested territory.
It is.
The era of the neutral internet is effectively over. Every piece of code, every routing table, and every cloud contract is now a geopolitical statement.
European regulators will be the ones to watch as they move from high-level policy to the actual enforcement of CADA's supply chain requirements. Keep an eye on any sudden spikes in sovereignty washing announcements from major cloud providers, because that will tell you if the EU's defensive shield is actually working or just creating a hollow shell. But if the software is starting to fight its own battles, does that mean the human element of cybersecurity is becoming obsolete or just more targeted? I was looking at my inbox this morning, and it's getting harder to tell if a message is from a real human being or just a very polite, very persistent bot trying to convince me I owe them money for a subscription I never signed up for.
That's because the line between human interaction and automated script is essentially evaporating. We are moving into the era of the AI arms race, where the battlefield isn't just about who has the better firewall, but who has the more sophisticated agentic models capable of discovering and weaponizing vulnerabilities before a human even realizes they exist.
Weaponizing vulnerabilities. That sounds like something out of a low-budget sci-fi thriller. Are we really talking about software that can decide to go on a digital rampage all by itself?
It's less about sentience and more about agency. We're seeing a fundamental shift from simple pattern-matching tools to models that can reason through a problem. For example, Federico Kirsch and Mike Schema highlighted a case where an LLM was used as a specialized reasoning engine to bypass ASLR and stack canaries on a mail server. What used to be a month-long manual research project was compressed into just 3 days.
The time to exploit just went from a long, tedious slog to a weekend project. That's a massive win for the bad guys.
Something to flag here is an asymmetric cost advantage. It is significantly cheaper and faster for an attacker to use AI to find an exploitable bug than it is for a developer to implement, test, and deploy a patch. And it doesn't stop at just finding the hole. We're seeing the rise of automated exploit generation. The threat is moving from the discovery phase to the weaponization phase.
Wait, so the AI finds the unlocked door and then it also knows how to pick the lock and bypass the alarm.
Stepping back, Anthropic's Mythos model is a perfect example of this shift. It's moving the window between a vulnerability being disclosed and an exploit being available down to mere minutes. We're also seeing this with agentic attacks. The NSA recently documented the first instance of an AI-powered container scape, where an AI used a Marimo notebook vulnerability to autonomously probe, escalate privileges, and steal Kubernetes credentials without any human intervention.
That is terrifying. It's like the burglar isn't just picking the lock, they're an invisible ghost that can navigate the house's blueprints in real time. But if the attackers are getting this much speed, I assume the defenders are trying to keep up.
They are, but the defenders are facing a vulnerability flood. Jackie Maguire has warned about this volumaxing trend. AI tools are finding massive quantities of vulnerabilities, which creates this crushing cycle of technical debt. It's creating a massive manual workload for human teams who now have to validate thousands of findings. And the tragedy is that a huge chunk of it, potentially up to 99%, is actually insignificant. It's just noise.
So we're building these incredibly expensive AI security systems, only for them to drown our human engineers in a sea of meaningless alerts.
It's even weirder than that. There's a vulnerability flywheel happening. Some analysts suggest an artificial economic cycle where AI companies generate demand for their own services by using LLMs to find vulnerabilities, and then they turn around and sell the AI-driven solutions and patches required to fix them. It's a self-perpetuating loop of finding and fixing.
That sounds less like security and more like a way to keep the billing department happy.
It's a valid criticism. And there's a massive strategic risk for smaller players here. We're seeing the emergence of a low-hanging fruit ecosystem. Large enterprises can afford the massive security spending required to run these multi-agent defense systems, but smaller vendors simply can't. They become the primary targets for attackers using automated, AI-discovered vulnerabilities.
So the big guys build high walls, and the small guys just get steamrolled by automated bots.
And the walls themselves are becoming more complex. Attackers are now using chaining techniques. They aren't just looking for one big zero day. They're using LLMs to find multiple older zombie vulnerabilities and chain them together into a single, novel, complex exploit. This fundamentally alters the blast radius of an attack.
It's like a person using a series of small, old, broken tools to build a massive, modern wrecking ball.
That's a great way to put it. But there's an even deeper, more systemic risk that we haven't fully grasped yet. As companies like Anthropic report that up to 80% of code being written today is robot-generated, we are facing a delayed awakening. If there is a common, undetected flaw embedded in the very logic used to train these LLMs, it could manifest as a massive, simultaneous vulnerability across the entire global infrastructure in 5 to 10 years.
So we're essentially building the foundations of the future's digital skyscrapers out of concrete that might have a microscopic, invisible crack in every single batch, and we won't realize it until the whole thing starts leaning.
The implication runs deeper. It's not just about the code itself. We're seeing a shift in how attacks are even structured. Tools like Cursor and Claude Opus are being used to automate ransomware toolkits and EDR evasion. They aren't just generating code, they are running an automated, iterative testing cycle to refine payloads specifically to bypass products like CrowdStrike or Microsoft Defender.
It's an arms race where the weapons are learning from every time they miss.
It really is. But there is a way to fight back, provided we move toward an agentic model of defense. Ed Wu from DropZone has been demonstrating how a multi-agent ecosystem can work. Instead of a central data lake that humans have to sift through, you have specialized AI agents for threat hunting, detection engineering, and incident scoping. In one experiment, a dual-agent system reduced the time from a social media threat report to a completed, validated threat hunt to under 5 hours.
5 hours? That's actually impressive. That's the difference between a small fire and the whole building being gone.
It's the move toward machine speed and machine scale. But for that to work, we have to move beyond simple alert triage. We need agents that can act autonomously. The goal is autonomous emerging threat response, where an AI sees a researcher post about a new bug on X, and by the time the human analyst has finished their coffee, the system has already hunted for that threat across the entire network and validated the results.
It sounds like the future of the Security Operations Center is just a room full of servers talking to each other, while the humans just watch the dashboard for the all-clear signal.
It's a possibility, but the economics are tricky. Mike Schema has noted that the primary challenge for 2026 will be the token economics, optimizing the return on investment for the tokens in versus the tokens out. If the cost of running these massive, multi-agent investigations outweighs the value of the vulnerabilities they find, the whole model collapses.
So we're essentially trying to find a way to make the digital immune system cost-effective.
We have to, because on the other side, the attackers are already optimizing. They aren't just looking for bugs, they are looking for ways to use prompt injection to bypass the very security layers we're building. As Tanya Janka and Graham Cluley have pointed out, LLMs fundamentally struggle to distinguish between a legitimate instruction and a malicious command embedded in user data. If an AI agent is designed to interact with untrusted inputs and use external tools, the prompt injection vulnerability might be inherently unsolvable.
So the very thing that makes the AI useful, its ability to follow instructions and use tools, is exactly what makes it a permanent security liability.
It's the ultimate paradox of the AI arms race.
Security architects need to stop budgeting for static defenses and start investing in high-scale, autonomous response agents that can match the speed of these automated exploits. Keep a close eye on the emergence of agent-solvable CTF challenges. If the industry's best researchers can no longer solve them, we'll know the training models for the next generation of defenders are officially broken. But as these machines get better at breaking into systems, they're also getting much better at talking their way past the people who hold the keys. I don't know, Alex. Every time you tell me that identity is the new perimeter, it sounds like a marketing slogan for a company that just wants to sell me more MFA tokens. If the attackers are already using deepfakes and hijack sessions, isn't the concept of a perimeter just a polite fiction we tell ourselves so we can sleep at night?
It's not a fiction, Maya. It's just moving from a firewall to a forensic audit of behavior. We aren't just looking at bad passwords anymore. We're looking at the hijacking of the trust loop itself.
Right, because nothing says trustworthy like a Microsoft Teams message from a colleague asking you to click a link for a critical update. It's practically a digital hug.
That hug is exactly the problem. According to Smashing Security, these identity-based attacks on Teams are increasingly difficult to catch because attackers are using legitimate, paid-for Microsoft 365 tenants. They aren't sending suspicious external emails. They are initiating standard peer-to-peer conversations that look identical to your daily workflow.
It's not a breach, it's just an uninvited guest who already has a key to the house.
Even worse, they are building entire production pipelines for these breaches. CyberWire Daily reports that the Blue Noroff Group has moved far beyond simple phishing. They are now using Adobe Premiere Pro to edit stolen footage and scraping YouTube to create highly convincing person-specific fake meeting environments. They start with a fraudulent Calendly invite, lead you to a cousin domain that looks like Zoom or Teams, and then exploit the Get User Media API to gain live access to your webcam and microphone during the fake meeting.
Wait, so they aren't just stealing my credentials. They're essentially setting up a high-end Hollywood studio to impersonate my boss in real time. That is a terrifying level of production value for a heist.
It's a pivot from technical exploits to psychological ones. We saw this with NSO Group too. WhatsApp's recent legal filings show that because they are under a court order to stop using zero-click exploits, NSO has shifted towards social engineering, using malicious links to drive users to external sites to bypass those specific technical restrictions.
It's the same pattern. If you can't break the lock, you just trick the owner into opening the door.
Worth noting, the door stays open much longer than we think. The Sands Internet Storm Center Daily Cybersecurity Podcast highlights a zombie permission risk with OAuth. You might grant an app access today, but even if that company goes bust and its domain is resold, that orphaned OAuth token can act like a persistent, unmonitored API key, allowing a new malicious owner of that domain to maintain access to your data.
So we are essentially leaving digital backdoors unlocked for companies that don't even exist anymore.
It's a massive inventory problem. Security teams can't just monitor active threats. They have to audit for silent permission drift where access remains long after the original purpose has vanished.
Security architects need to stop validating access requests within the same chat thread where the request originated. Watch for an increase in low-end slow exfiltration through common cloud services like OneDrive, as that will signal attackers have mastered blending into our routine traffic. But this level of impersonation makes you wonder how much we can actually trust the software we rely on to run our entire infrastructure. 27,000. That is the current backlog of unprocessed vulnerabilities in the National Vulnerability Database, more than doubling since early last year. We are essentially trying to map a forest fire using a broken compass.
It is a functional crisis, Maya. CyberWire Daily reports this backlog is driven by NIST pulling funding for data processing contractors, creating a massive visibility gap. And the fire is spreading through our very foundation. We're seeing a shift from simple credential theft to active self-propagating mechanisms like the miasma worm. Johannes Ulrich noted that the Shai-Hulud variant is actively infecting downstream users by compromising GitHub repositories, 72 Microsoft ones, to be exact, forcing Microsoft to disable them and break entire CI/CD pipelines just to contain the spread.
The only way to know if your automated defenses are working is if your entire deployment process suddenly breaks. That's like a smoke alarm that only works if it manages to shut off your electricity.
It sounds absurd, but a pipeline break can be a positive indicator that a malicious update was intercepted. The danger is getting more subtle. Application Security Weekly highlighted a prompt injection attack in the JQuick Java library, where the author embedded instructions in the documentation to trick AI coding agents into deleting unit tests. It's bypassing traditional code audits entirely.
Great, so we've gone from hackers breaking into the house to hackers leaving post-it notes that trick our AI housekeepers into throwing out the security system.
There's a signal here, it's compounding. Enterprise Security Weekly notes volumaxing using AI to rapidly generate code is producing commits 6 times longer than human-coded ones, which frequently pull in unused, vulnerable libraries. This creates a massive, unvetted surface area. Even our trusted payment rails aren't safe. Risky, biz-reported e-skimmers are now using legitimate Stripe metadata to host malicious scripts, hiding theft within highly trusted domains.
Security architects need to stop treating dependency updates as a purely operational task and start treating them as a high-stakes forensic investigation. Watch for any sudden surge in dependency cooldown adoption in package managers, because that will signal a massive retreat from the real-time patch agility we've relied on for decades. Looking back at everything we've covered this Tuesday, June 9th, there is a clear, unsettling thread running through the news: the collapse of the perimeter. Whether it's the Kremlin's expansion of SORM surveillance, the fragmentation of the internet through Europe's CADA regulations, or the way attackers are now hijacking trusted workflows on LinkedIn and Teams, the concept of a secure zone is dissolving. We are moving into a reality where there is no outside to defend against. There is only a continuous, friction-filled environment of constant interaction.
And the critical implication here isn't just that the landscape is changing, but that the fundamental calculus for CISOs and national security architects has shifted from protection to resilience under automation. The emergence of agentic AI means the window for human intervention is closing. When an adversary can use LLMs to automate the entire lifecycle of an exploit, from finding a flaw in a library like JQuick to weaponizing it, the defender can no longer rely on a reactive patch cycle. The decision makers at agencies like CISA or the US Cyber Command can no longer prioritize prevention as a primary metric. They have to pivot toward building autonomous, multi-agent defensive ecosystems that can match the machine speed of an automated breach.
It's a shift from managing gates to managing flows.
If you want to know if this shift is already irreversible, keep a very close eye on the National Vulnerability Database. If we see that the gap between discovery and exploitation continues to widen, specifically if those 27,000 currently unprocessed vulnerabilities begin to be exploited by automated scripts before a human even logs a ticket, then we'll know the era of human-led remediation has officially lost the race.
A sobering thought to end on. Thanks for joining us for this cybersecurity edition. We'll see you next week.